You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon or good evening, everybody. It's 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. Welcome to the American Hour. I am Commander Tom, and of course, joined by our lovely co-host, Paula Lozon-Ostman. How are you today, Paula?
Doing excellent, Tom. We've got a nice, clear, sunny day here in Boston, and with a temperature of 72, and got to let you know that Warriors, my son's soccer game, tied today against Southeastern Regional. So they've got two wins and one tie.
Awesome. They're on a roll. Okay, now how far do you think they can go with this?
I don't know that we'll know anything until the end of November.
Okay. All right. And how big is the region that they'll be playing in? I mean, how many other teams do they get to play against? And are we just talking, is it Boston proper or the entire state?
It's, I would say it is the county of Norfolk and probably southeastern Massachusetts is what it entails, Bristol County.
Okay. Now, if they were to win the championship there, would they go on to play in some, a greater area coverage, like for a state championship?
Yes, for the Mayflower League. That was my son.
Okay, awesome. Well, good. Congratulations to your son, and that sounds like fun. You're having some nice weather down here in South Florida. It's been, it's hard to say, well, we're getting some weather from offshore, but we've got these thunderstorms that just pop up during the day and big, I mean, covering large areas. So it's almost like there's a weather system going through, and I've been getting a lot of rain and off and on. And it almost looks like if you didn't know what the temperature outside was, you would think it was maybe a winter, front going through here, but it's hot and humid and rainy. So we're looking for some, well, we needed the rain big time because we had a drought, but it's getting to the point where I think we're okay, and maybe it's time to start moving into the fall. So we'll see if that happens or not. But we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got a great guest coming up. Before we get to the guest, I'm going to talk about a couple things here that occurred over the weekend. One, I was at the CPAC Florida Convention. That was the first CPAC convention ever to be held in Florida. It was a big success. And, of course, the straw poll was taken there. And Herman Cain won handily. Doesn't surprise me because being a part of Florida activism and politics, and especially knowing the Central Florida crowd, it didn't surprise me at all that he won that straw poll. Now, I got to see him very briefly, not to interview for the show. We did do a bunch of interviews, and I'll talk about that in a second. But he came walking in the back door to Radio Row, and I was right by that door. He came in, looked at me, smiled. I waved to him. He waved back, and then he went over and did a couple other interviews that had been lined up. Our good friend Ed Dean pretty much interviewed everybody. If you go to eddeanradio.com, just do a Google of Ed Dean Radio, and he interviewed everybody's there. Rick Santorum, some of the senatorial candidates. I had two senatorial candidates come and meet with us and interview, as well as some folks from the Madison Foundation. Actually, it was the president of the Madison Foundation, which really is a Florida-based organization. Love to have this CEO come back on for a full-blown interview. They're doing some great work in Florida, and it's really something that everybody in the country benefits with. But go check out the interview. If you go to our website, usaradionetwork.com, you can either go, well, actually, to get the link to the show, you need to click on our archives button there or link. It'll take you there. Look for Michael Cutler Show, because it was technically Michael Cutler Show on Friday. I had him kind of bend the hours a little bit so that we could accommodate interviews from 3 to 5. And, boy, I tell you, the second hour, it was nothing but cramming interviews in. Our good friend Susan Bradford, who wrote the book Lynch, joined us for a while. And at the very end of our interviews, second to last interview was Grover Norquist, if you're familiar with him, in his efforts to lobby, essentially, and work with members of Congress and our government elected officials to stop tax increases. Love the guy. He does a great job, and he's been a real force behind motivating our legislators as well as other activist groups to join in with him and stop the madness. So Grover Norquist had probably about a 4-minute interview with him, and that was nice that he stopped by to talk to us. So some great interviews, 2 hours worth of interviews, and of course Mike Cutler and I discussed some different things. And so look for the Michael Cutler Show with Tom Garcia live from CPAC, Florida. And one of the things, Paula, that really I thought was a highlight of the whole event was Anita Moncrief, who is the Acorn whistleblower. And I recorded her speech, but you know, when you're there, I was pretty close to the podium, and I had the microphone set up to, you know, take in all of the, as much of her speech as possible, but you're going to get background sound. And I thought about putting it on the website, but I think I'm just going to put a link to a YouTube video of her talking, because it's really the same speech, and you can see her speaking and hear her very clearly because it was professionally recorded. It was at a it was done on April 30th, 2011 at the Patriot Center in Wausau, Wisconsin, at the Wisconsin Campaign for Liberty Annual Conference, Liberty Fest 2011. So here's how you can find it. We'll get the link up, but if you just do a Google of Anita Moncrief, M-O-N-C-R-I-E-F, Anita Moncrief, Acorn Whistleblower. They'll come up, and then look for the one, lots of them will come up. Look for the one that says WI for Wisconsin CFL 2011 Annual Conference. It's very clear. You can see her speak. And boy, I thought I knew the story, but you know how the press really doesn't give us all the information. She goes into detail. If anybody wants to say that Acorn was railroaded, not a chance. She blows the lid completely off that organization and the absolute cronyism, political cronyism, and corruption that was going on in that group. She thought she was hired by Acorn, but then she was assigned to a Project Vote, to some organization that was supposed to be nonpartisan, but she still worked with Acorn, so it was completely partisan. At one point, she was given a thumb drive with all of Obama's donors that gave money under $200. Now, remember, he wouldn't release the names out. He says, I don't have to. And by law, he was correct. He didn't have to, but he was unwilling to do that. What happened was she was given this thumb drive and told, start contacting or get people involved in contacting these donors, these smaller donors, and tell them that they can give more money, give it to Acorn, and we'll make sure we use it to help Obama. So, I mean, and the stories just go on and on. The stuff that was going on, it was just unbelievable. And so one of the other interesting things in her speech was she talked about, at one point, I mean, she was really a believer and really involved in this and wanted to help Obama get elected and was believed in the Democrat Party. At one point she suggested, she said, why don't we start trying to go after the middle class? Oh, man, they just – it scared them, and she said she thinks she might have been put on the Acorn watch list when she said that, because here's the deal, and she explains it better than I'm going to explain it here, but they don't want anything to do with the middle class. The middle class does not help their goal of you know, raising money and getting the word out, etc. They're more than happy to hire criminals, people that can't vote, don't vote, homeless people, so they can always just say, oh, no, look, that was a bad apple. It was not our fault. But they don't want to go to the middle class because the middle class won't fall for their lies. So they really pander to the poor and various, you know, what do you want to call it, constituencies of different color and that sort of thing, and that's where they work. That's where they do their work. They're bottom feeders, not that people – that fit those categories or that, but the organization's a bottom feeder, and they have no desire to try and work with the middle class, because if you read Saul Alinsky's book, The Playbook for the Left, Rules for Radicals, and I'm going to read something here a little later on from that, their goal is to destroy the middle class, so they're not going to try and work with the middle class because the middle class doesn't fall for their lies. So it's a great story. It takes about – 18 minutes. I recorded 15 minutes. Her speech at the Wisconsin CFL conference is 18 minutes. So go to YouTube, do a search for Anita Moncrief. Fantastic speech, and pretty much the same one that we heard Friday morning at the it was a Tea Party Suite that was provided by a lot of the Central Florida Tea Party groups. And there was another gentleman that joined us who had been a radical leftist. I mean, radical, working with Black Panthers and other groups like that, who talked about how he hated middle class. So he sat up there and said, I used to hate you. I used to hate all of you. I hated the police. I hated the military. But I really, truly wanted to help people. His name is Brandon Darby. Brandon Darby. Do a Google of him and you'll find his story. At one point, he began to realize that his leftist radical beliefs and the people he was working with were not doing anything whatsoever to help people. Nothing whatsoever. And so he started pulling back from that. Then, because of all his activism to the left, he started getting requests to help out on various sort of disruptive activities, et cetera. And some of these were very disruptive to the point of terrorism. And so he finally went to the authorities and started working with the FBI. And one of the things he said, how many of you know that, I believe it was 2004, Republican National Convention to, you know, elect the nominee in 2004, that a bunch of protesters had organized from the left to go disrupt that, and many of them were making bombs and were going to try and blow up and kill as many delegates as possible to disrupt that whole process. And he helped bust that up. Now the New York Times and other mainstream media tried glossing over it, say that it was all a plant, a setup, and every time the truth came out, then they revised their story. But it happened. I never heard about it. Most people in that room knew nothing about it. He was there in the middle of it. And so the two people here, Anita Moncrief and Brandon Darby, are people that really believed in the left and its cause and what it was doing. But as they began to discover their true intentions, what they're truly about, they could not abide by that. And so the word courage was brought up a lot, and it's very true. But the word I didn't hear, I would have liked to have heard, and it's the absolute truth, is these are two people that have integrity. And integrity is doing what's right simply because it's right, no matter who knows, who will find out. It's all about your own personal integrity, because integrity is very personal. It's doing what's right simply because it's right. And here are two people that did it. And their stories were amazing. So that was really quite fabulous. I was, and I'll tell you where I sat. It was a large room with a lot of tables that had been, I don't know if paid for, but and supported this conference room that we were able to, or ballroom almost, banquet room that we were sitting in. I got to sit with the Titusville Patriots. Don Ford's the leader of that organization. He formed that a few years back, and of course I was one of the first people to join that organization. Titusville Patriots. Got to sit with that wonderful crew of people. And I was lucky because I was close to the podium, and a lot of people, there were a lot of chairs behind the tables, and a lot of people standing in the back, too. So it was a full house. I had a great seat. It was quite enjoyable. And so if you want to find out more about those folks, Google those names, but definitely go listen to Anita Moncrief's presentation on YouTube. It's fantastic. All right, so what else happened while I was at CPAC? We'll cover that a little bit more and get into a couple other things. Wandered around, talked with a lot of people. I did not go to any of the breakout sessions or any of the speeches, but you know, there were a few presidential candidates there, all of the senatorial candidates, and it was kind of a fun place to be because I hadn't done any kind of a conference or been to any type of a rally in probably about a year or so. So it was quite nice to be surrounded by a lot of people that I know from the past and hadn't seen in quite some time. It was very enjoyable. And, you know, very peace-loving group. Anybody that says that Tea Parties are racist, they're the racist. And we're going to prove that here a little later on. But what a great, fantastic group of people. We're talking folks like myself that served in the military, homemakers, just every slice and piece of type of person from America was there. And anybody that wants to say the Tea Party is a danger or the enemy, et cetera, They're the enemy. They are the absolute enemy. They are the enemies of the state because the Tea Party group represents America and the best of America, Constitution-loving patriots who have served their country. Most of these loser liberals to the left have not served their country. They don't love the Constitution. They can't stand the Constitution. And they want to destroy this country and build up their new vision of what this country ought to be on its ruins. And that's what they continue to do. So let's talk a little bit about the mindset of the libtard. And that's what I named part of the show. We talk about the mindset of the libtard. And the reason I did that is because I'm not talking about necessarily just liberals. I'm talking about stupid liberals. I'm not talking about Democrats. I'm talking about stupid liberals. Why are they stupid? Well, I'm going to read something, first of all, from Rules for Radicals, the playbook for the liberal left, written by Saul Alinsky. And it's dedication, part of the dedication of his book. He dedicates it to Lucifer. He said, "Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical. From all our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or which is which? The first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment." Let's see, what would the establishment have been, Paula? Oh, that's right, the kingdom of God. Yeah, okay. He rebelled against the kingdom of God and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom. Here fully encapsulates the mind of the liberal, the libtard, and that is, they do not care what destruction they cause, what damage, what they leave in their wake. It's all about achieving their so-called cause. They can stand on a heap of ash and look around and see, literally, the kingdom of hell and smile because they achieved what they wanted to do, whether it was saving the planet from global warming, saving the little furry animals, saving trees, eugenics, you know, decreasing the population of man because the planet's more important than man. On and on and on. Doesn't matter what it is. They don't care about the destruction they cause. They just care about their cause. And that's because they do everything based on emotion and nothing on substance, nothing on fact. So here you've got somebody admiring Lucifer who won. What did he win? Hell. He won hell. Wow. That's what I like. I don't care what kind of kingdom I get as long as I get one. And if hell is available, boy, I'll take it. This is just insane. They are insane people who will destroy this nation and the entire planet in an attempt to achieve what Lucifer did, destroy the kingdom of God. Okay, so there's the beginning of the mindset of the libtard. Now, there are some websites out there, and there's some people that every now and then respond to something that I put out on Twitter that are libtards, and they're never based on substance. Oh, you lie, Tom. So then I refute them. I don't take much time to deal with these people, but one of the ones I got lately was saying, "Oh, that article you sent out there is not true. It's not connected to what you said." I'm like, well, it absolutely is. But in the conversation, this gentleman is making a very big point on his website to say that you conservative nut jobs keep calling Obama a Marxist. He's not even close to being a Marxist. So tell us, where are the real Marxists out there? Well, let's see. Let me start with explaining how Obama is a Marxist. He attended a church for 20 years based on black liberation theology. Reverend Wright himself said, right on Fox News, "I teach black liberation theology." Now, you can go to the gentleman who wrote the book on and started the concept of black liberation theology. It's based on liberation theology, which started in the Caribbean and Latin America. It is the concept of distorting Christianity to be adaptable to Marxism. That's the definition. And the gentleman who started black liberation theology will tell you in his book, it's about Marxism. He doesn't deny it. Nobody denies it. So, Paula, can you go to a church that has distorted Christianity to be adaptable to Marxism, and in this case, black liberation theology, for the black community to distort Christianity to make it adaptable to Marxism, acceptable to Marxism, and not be a Marxist 20 years in that church, and that's what the whole basis of the church is? I mean, does that make any sense at all? Of course not.
No, it doesn't, and I'm still, to be quite honest with you, I'm still a little bit confused about the whole thing, but no, I don't believe that that is true.
Well, here's why they want to use Marxism. It was used for the the poor in the Caribbean, Latin America, to come up with a way for justifying turning the tables on their quote oppressors and the government to say, you know, the only way for the worker, for the poor, to be truly free is to take control of the government, society, property rights, and on and on. So personal property rights, corporate property rights, there are no such things as property rights. Everybody shares in it. And Marxism, as described by Karl Marx, leads to socialism, which in turn leads to communism. That's the ultimate goal. So that's the basis for Marxism. And in fact, let me back up a second, though. So he attends a church for 20 years based on that. That's sort of like somebody else attending the KKK rallies for 20 years and going, oh, no, I'm not a racist or a Klansman. No, I just go for the good food. You know, it's ridiculous. So the theory of Marxism seeks the elimination of the notion of private property in order to gain control of the economic means of production. What are we talking about? We've got to nationalize. We've got to take control of the government of manufacturing, production, corporations, et cetera, because that's the only way to equalize and, guess what, spread the wealth. So let me continue on reading the full definition here. The notion of private property in order to gain control of the economic means of production. What are the economic means of production? Well, it can be a lot of things, but for the most part, every business. Now, every business has been nationalized in Cuba. Boy, they're such a wealthy nation and doing so good. And any libtard out there that wants to say, but we embargo them, wait a minute. No other nation in the world is embargoing. Are you saying that if the United States of America embargoes you, you're screwed, you cannot succeed? What a joke that is. Absolutely, you can succeed without the United States of America because every other country in the world will trade with you and work with you. It's got nothing to do with our embargo. It has everything to do with their type of society, and that is communism. But the means of production have been taken over by the government to take it from the bourgeois, the wealthy. What are we talking about these days? Class warfare. We've got to take more and more wealth from the wealthy because it's only fair. We're not told how much wealth we have to take because there is no end until we've taken it all. But we've got to take from the wealthy or the property class for the benefit of the working class. There you have it. This president is constantly talking about spreading the wealth. The wealthy don't pay their fair share when, in fact, they pay more than their fair share. They pay far more than anybody else, and now we're up to about 50% of the entire country doesn't even pay any taxes.
Right.
So how can that not be their fair share? They shouldn't be paying any taxes either. It's really about power and control. It has nothing to do with the poor people and the working class, et cetera. It's all about the elite getting control of everybody and eliminating the middle class. It's not really about eliminating the wealthy. They don't care about the wealthy. There aren't that many of them, right? It's about the middle class. There's where the real money is. We want to turn the middle class into the working poor class like we see in Cuba, Venezuela, North Korea, China, although China is becoming a little more capitalistic to some degree, but it has been very, communistic for a very, very long time. So Karl Marx's philosophy of history was called historical materialism, in which his goal was to bring about the end of history by means of an eventual, perfect, classless utopian society called communism. The way to get there was via Marxism. Start off with that, move to socialism, and then on to communism. And those are exactly the talking points and the reasoning behind what this president and his administration is doing. So any libtard thinks, oh, he's not a Marxist at all. He fits the classic definition of Marxism. Absolutely. So in any case, the final thing I'll say about that is that our libtard friends really are true believers, and that's because they believe based on emotionalism, and they don't have any substance. One of the things I sent this libtard was, he said that he used the classic statement that, well, the Republicans are just trying to line the pockets of the rich. So I sent him a statement saying, what about Solyndra? The administration...
Buckle and a half.
Yeah, well, but here's what happened, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Paula, that the administration restructured their loans as they were starting to have problems before the eventual end, restructured their loans so that the top of the list, if they were to default, the top of the list for getting repaid would not be the taxpayer, who is the bulk owner and the bulk provider of loans to Solyndra, but the private investors. So how does a libtard justify this administration readjusting the loan from what it was, where the taxpayer would get their money first, to the wealthy private investors getting their money first, which there may not be much money after they get their money back, if there is any, to get back by selling off assets and other things. There may not be anything for the taxpayer. Let me see. Does that sound like the Republican Party lining the pockets of the wealthy, Paula?
I would venture to guess, yes. I guess that's why people like our friend Noel Davis, who's founder at Veligear Systems, he's a U.S. manufacturer, are having a problem as well. He let me know recently that he's presenting at the 5th Annual Clean Energy Venture Summit in Austin this week. And, they're all having an issue. But, you know, small manufacturers like Noel and they need the money to get their businesses started up so we can keep the jobs here in America. And, well, let's just give them to these big conglomerates like Solyndra, like the one that we lost here in Massachusetts. I want to say it's Evergreen, but I'm probably wrong. They close their doors.
Yeah.
I don't know where the justification is.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of the problem is this president made promises about creating green jobs, and he couldn't keep them. But in the beginning, to ensure he could keep them, they made a rush to help companies like Solyndra. I'm not opposed to the government helping, but the government has to understand it's our money. It's taxpayer money. But they tell us it's going to benefit us. Well, it didn't benefit us.
No.
And the excuse is, well, China started making more solar panels. Now, that's not all true. They were not a good risk to begin with. The Bush administration initially looked at them, and the Department of Energy ultimately said, this is a high-risk venture not worth spending taxpayer money on. So the Bush administration said, then we won't do it. The instant Obama was in office, boom, who's out there that we can get some green jobs going? Oh, Solyndra, okay, let's fast-track this. And within the Department of Energy, they were still saying, even in his administration, this is risky. Don't push us. We need time to evaluate this and make a good decision. Not too late. Go ahead, do what you got to do, but we're already going to do a press conference and do some appearances. I mean, they were putting the cart before the horse. So they were very hot to make this work. And this is something that an inexperienced, never done anything in his life president and administration will do. They've got ideals, but they have no experience making these ideals work or pay off. Somebody that's been out there in the business world for a certain amount of time, a guy like, say, Herman Cain or Mitt Romney, et cetera, would have looked at this and said, I want a detailed analysis of the risk of this organization, and it might be willing to take the risk. And there are all kinds of models for risk analysis. You know, I used to use one model in probability versus severity in a fairly simple model in aviation safety. And there are plenty of models where you can look at it, and it helps you decide whether the risk is worth it or not. In the business world, there are other models, more complicated models. But you look at those things, and then you decide. And the other thing you have to look at is this is not private investors who are willing to risk money and maybe lose. It's a gamble. These are the taxpayers who aren't involved in the decision process. Our representatives have to make those decisions for us, so they have to be more conservative. This administration was not conservative because it was all about making themselves look good. They don't care about you and me, Paul. They don't care about the taxpayers' money. They don't care about government debt or the size of government. What they care about is making themselves look good, and they believe they could do this by fast-tracking a company that was a high-risk proposition
exactly.
So that they could look good.
Yeah, and there's a trickle-down effect now because Solar City, which is a Foster City-based installer, said that they're going to scale back their huge military solar project after it became clear today that new rules imposed by Congress in response to Solyndra's demise would make it impossible for them to meet a September 30th deadline to qualify for a federal loan guarantee. They had qualified for a $240 million federal loan guarantee to back part of the $1 billion project to install solar on up to 160,000 military residences across 33 states. But when Friday had come, SolarCity had said that the Department of Energy said new rule changes to the loan guarantee might make it impossible to finalize the guarantee by the end of the month for the program.
Yeah.
So what SolarCity is going to do is it's going to move ahead instead with projects in the 11 states where it already operates. And the CEO of SolarCity mentioned that they're going to have to look at financing without loan guarantees. That's just going to put a damper on everything.
Yeah, exactly. And you really hit the nail on the head here, Paula. There are things that we could and should be doing, but when you are an incompetent administration that only cares about yourself and your reelection prospects, you rush ahead on things that you have no experience in, no worldly experience in. This guy's absolutely incompetent and over his head. So what he's done is created a scandal, and the libs go, oh, this is not a real scandal, this is manufactured. It is a scandal because it shows how incompetent this guy is. It's not maybe that big a deal if the libtards really want, you know, I'll maybe concede just to shut them up, which it is a big deal, but I'll concede that. But it really truly shows this guy has no experience. And now he's telling us there's a lot more to do. We need 4 more years. Come on, people, get out there and rally for reelecting me because there's a lot more to do. There wouldn't be a lot more to do if you'd done it right the first time. And he won't do it right the second time because he's so incompetent. So that's what people have to understand about this. What it really shows you, is it a huge amount of money compared to the trillions this guy's been spending? No, but it just goes to show he has very poor judgment. The people surrounding him have very poor judgment, and the cronyism involved here. The capital cronyism involved with investors that are heavy donors to his campaign, and then we turn around and readjust the loans. Now, look, there's part of a reason why they did it. They were on their way down in smoking flames for the big crash, and some of the private investors said, we'll infuse some more money, but the only way we're going to do it is if you put us at the head of the line for default. So that took a lot of the risk away from the private investors. They're going to get some of that back, okay? But there was a chance that things would turn around, okay? And maybe it was also, listen, you guys, don't donate to my campaign next time. Just try and help this out, and that will help me out. Drag this out a little bit longer. There's all kinds of cronyism going on here, and you can only imagine what the discussions were. But that's where somebody with experience would look at this and say, this is a done deal. It's over. It's only a matter of time. And they want, all we would do is buy some more time before this crashes and burns, and then we've put, for the prospect of delaying that crash and burn, the private investors at the head of the line. That's the incompetence here. That's the poor decision-making process. That never should have been done. Yes, you could say, oh, they were trying to help the company out. That's not the real reason there. The real reason is they're going to go to the head of the line, they're going to get most of their money back, and it's not that big a risk for them. And we, the taxpayer, take it in the shorts. It was a hope to drag this out a bit longer so the president could continue to prop this company up and say, look, I'm creating green jobs. Speaking of green jobs, Paula, do you know that mass transit, where they're saying they've created thousands of green jobs, they're counting mass transit. You know, I've been riding buses since I was a kid, not only school buses, but mass transit buses and trains and trolleys and things like that. But somehow Obama gets to take credit for something that's been around since before he was born. Mass transit is true. Paul, if you and I get on a bus and head up to Maine, and we get there, it certainly would be cheaper and better for the environment than us each taking individual cars, correct? So that's
correct.
How they're creating green jobs. So then I got to thinking about this, and I thought, you know, when I fly a bunch of people around within the U.S., hey, I'm a green job that Obama created, although I got my job 20 years ago. I'm a green job that Mr. Obama created, and he can take credit for me flying people, 220 people across the country, that if they all got in individual cars, yeah, that would be worse for the environment. So somehow that's green job. But you know what, Paula? When I fly 220 people to Europe, they can't drive their cars to Europe, or it'd be a very long drive, be a very wet one too. Guess what I am then? I'm not green at all. I'm a polluter because Europe is cracking down on airlines and putting severe penalties on them. I was looking at the numbers. American Airlines is probably going to have to be paying for, you know, the carbon expulsion of the jets coming into Europe, something like 35 million a year. Some of the other air carriers are going to be higher because of the kind of airplanes they fly, not quite as fuel efficient as ours. So all of a sudden, if I fly in the U.S., I'm green. But if I leave the U.S., I'm a polluter. Doing the same job, same exact job, but suddenly a polluter. What hypocrisy, absolute hypocrisy and deception and lies from this administration about green jobs. They have not created green jobs because they haven't gone about it properly. I'm not opposed to green jobs at all, but what they've done is they've relied on political and capital cronyism to try and accelerate things, but they're not looking at the risk properly, and they're not looking at other possibilities that are out there that are reasonable. But they're too small. They're looking for the big fish. They're looking to go, look at this. We created a million green jobs in the solar panel industry or the windmill industry or whatever it is, when it's not going to happen like that. It's going to take a lot longer. But they pushed, pushed, and pushed because of their absolute incompetence. So that's what we're looking at. So in any case, for these libtards, this is the mindset of the libtard. We don't care what we destroy. We don't care how we get there. The end justifies the means, even if everything's destroyed behind us. And that is something that you will see in their writings as they discuss things. And also, they're going to lie, lie, lie. As our friend Michael Cutler says, if at first you don't succeed, lie, lie again. And this president has tried to recycle all of the things that haven't worked in the first couple years of his presidency and repackage them. Nope, not a stimulus. It's infrastructure investment. It's not a stimulus. It is giving money to the states so that they can pay their state union employees and keep their governments afloat until we get past the next election. So one of the articles I pulled up from the American Thinker from September 26th, so that would have been today. Tax demagogues are lying liars. And he says in one graph, this is written by Randall Hoven. So if you do a search on American Think for tax demagogues or just lying liars, it's an interesting one. He quotes Paul Krugman twice, Matthew Iglesias, Warren Buffett, the New York Times. Of course, we know the New York Times just has to lie every time they print anything. And then, of course, President Obama. And the big lie there was President Obama saying that, and here it is, and that's why this plan eliminates tax loopholes that primarily go to the wealthiest taxpayers and biggest corporations, tax breaks that small businesses and middle-class families don't get. And if tax reform doesn't get done, this plan asks the wealthiest Americans to go back to paying the same rates they paid in the 1990s before the Bush tax cuts. Now, he's got a chart that shows the highest quintile, so the highest fifth of taxpayers, what percentages they pay and how much they've paid since 1979. The trend has been an uptrend where overall until between 2003 and 7 they've kind of matched. But from 95 to 2003, it was an uptrend for our highest earners and a downtrend for everybody else, especially the biggest downtrend since 70, we'll actually call it 83. There's been a continual downtrend, has been the lowest fifth of taxpayers. The lowest fifth, their taxes in terms of rate and amount has gone down, 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 down. So to say that the rich aren't paying their fair share is an outright lie. To say that the rich are paying less than their secretaries is an outright lie. Because here's what happens, and I don't want to rehash what people have been seeing in the news, but it's real simple. A guy like Warren Buffett, he doesn't pay himself a salary. He doesn't need to. He's a billionaire. But what he does have are lots of investments. Now, where did he get the money for those investments? Did it just end up on his front doorstep with a basket of golden eggs or some such thing? No. He had to earn it. So he paid income on that money. Now he invests it. And guess what, Paula? He gets to pay capital gains on it when he exercises any dividends and capital gains. So right. Now he's paying taxes on it twice. Warren Buffett fails to mention that he already paid income tax on all that money at a higher rate than you and I pay, Paula, and then he gets to turn around and pay capital gains tax on it, 15%. He loves to talk about how you and I have an income tax, then also a payroll tax, which is Social Security and Medicare, and that our federal taxes are clearly higher than his 15%, but he always fails to mention, just like our president and all of his administration, that they've already paid income tax and payroll tax on all of that money leading up to that. That money didn't suddenly appear in his account that never paid any kind of income taxes on. That's an outright lie. So in reality, Warren Buffett has, over the long term, paid much higher taxes than you and I, because, Paula, you and I aren't living off of capital gains. We're just paying income tax and payroll tax. He's already been through all of that, and now he's paying an additional tax on top of all of that. So it's an outright deception and lie. So this is a great article that shows you in one chart, and he talks about some different things, let's pick one of them out. He said Reagan tax cuts became fully effective in 83, but look at the trend in average tax rate for the highest earners after that. It went up. The same cannot be said for the lowest taxpayers. The tax rate for the lower 80% of taxpayers, the lower 80%, remained virtually flat or trended downward from 83 to 2000. He's got one other chart here to show average federal income taxes paid as a percentage of income. And he starts with people making under $75,000 all the way up to $10 million or more. And the tax rate, you know, just keeps going up. Under $75,000, the average total federal income tax rate paid was 6.6%. And as you work your way on it, it goes up and up. And as you get into the $200,000 to $500,000, that's the new millionaire now. If you make $200,000, Paula, you are a millionaire or billionaire. I know that's been all over the place, but it's such hypocrisy. But now we're talking 19.6%. You get into 500,000 to million, 24.4%. Million to 1.5 million, 25. It just keeps going up. Now at the very, very top end, you're looking at a lower rate, down to 22.6%. But that's precisely why people making $10 million, nobody gets a salary of $10 million. I'm looking for that job, Paula, but there's nobody out there that's going to hire me and say, we're going to pay you, Tom, $10 million a year. These are the ultra-wealthy who are taking capital gains dividends. So in other words, they say, I made $15 million this year. What was all off capital gains? But again, they've already paid income tax on all the money that they've invested. So the reality is, their overall tax over the long term is much higher than anybody else. So, again, that article, Randall Hoven, Tax Demagogues Are Lying Liars. I like his language. In The American Thinker, September 26th. So it looks like maybe we're not going to have our guest join us today, Paul. Let's just talk about it real quickly so people can know that when we do get him back. He wrote a book called Rescuing a Broken America. And it's Michael Kaufman, Ph.D., Dr. Michael Kaufman, and it's a great book. If you want to look for it, just Google Rescuing America, or you can go to Rescuing a Broken America, or you can go to the website Rescuing America Book, rescuingamericabook.com, and he talks all about, you know, what's in his book. He's got an overview, forward preface, and you can read the first whole chapter online there. So that's pretty cool. And let's see. We want to talk about an upcoming guest. Now, we don't have a date set, but I got an email from the one of the agents of Matt Dallas. If you don't know who Matt Dallas is, go take a look at him at the Internet Movie Database, IMDb, or just Google Matt Dallas and see this kind of stuff he's been doing. But he has done a documentary recently, traveling across the country, talking with recently returned Iraq and Afghanistan vets. He's now, I guess that so impressed him that he's now going to do a movie. It'll be a fictionalized movie based on his experiences, though, with vets, about how vets are dealing with returning home. And I think this is probably going to be one of those movies that everybody needs to see to appreciate what our vets have gone through and are going to continue to go through even after they get out of the military and they're back home. So I love his acting, and he's a great actor, and so really looking forward to having him come on, and we'll talk about his career, et cetera, in the first half of the show. But then we're going to get into the veteran stuff, and we're going to be promoting this on a whole host of veterans' websites and groups that I'm affiliated with throughout the country so that we can really pump up the listenership. But I know his fan base alone is probably going to be overwhelming our switchboard, and hopefully so. We're going to heavily promote this. So, Paul, I'm going to have to find somebody to help you out on the switchboard for that show. But we're looking maybe at the end of October, so I'm going to send him some dates, and we will see, you know, we'll let people know as soon as that comes out, and we'll get a big ad up on the website and Facebook and Twitter. So now, if you're not following us, that's Matt Dallas. Google him, and you'll be impressed. Nice. Very nice young man, and has a really a growing career. We're going to see a lot more from him. He was in about three or four different movies this year. One of the most notable will be I think it's called The First Ride of Wyatt Earp. And so it's going to be about the early days of Wyatt Earp. And I'm not sure why, but they've got, now his name eludes me, playing the lead role in Wyatt Earp. He played in one of those previous movies. He played Doc Holliday. You know who I'm talking about, Paula?
I sort of do, and his name escapes me, too. Goldie's husband, Kurt Russell?
Yeah, it was with Kurt Russell, and he played the lead role in the movie The Saint some years ago, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but Matt Dallas played the role of Bat Masterson in that, and so we're looking forward to that movie. It looks like a promising movie, interesting movie. Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer's playing Wyatt Earp in that. Don't know much more than that, but that's one of the movies he was in this year, so he's been real busy this year. And so anyway, Matt Dallas will get more information. I will be contacting his agent tomorrow, and maybe we'll have some idea by Wednesday or later in the week, certainly by next week, of when we might be getting him on the show. So we're really looking forward to that. Now, if you're not following us on Facebook, maybe you don't have a Facebook account, get one. It's not that big a deal. But also Twitter. Now, Twitter is not real invasive in terms of like Facebook. You can be pretty anonymous, but I think you want to be following Twitter because it has some real benefits. I mean, what would you – I don't want to put you on the spot, Paula, but what would you say are some of the benefits of being on Twitter?
Brand presence.
Yeah. Well, it does, and that can help you. And if you're just the average person out there what's Twitter going to do for me? You can search for conservatives – conservative Twitterers out there. And one of the things that I did when I was campaigning a couple years ago, I picked out some of the best conservatives that, you know, either had some really good ideas. There's one guy that I just think is fantastic, Mark Ross 67. Go search for him. He's always focused on the Constitution and always has great thoughts, great quotes from our founders. But there are other people that are constantly putting out news that the mainstream media is not covering. And that's one of the reasons I really like Twitter, is it's almost a rapid way to find out information that's going on that you're not going to get in the mainstream media. So you can follow lots of people. Like, I'm following about almost 3,800 people. I've got about 3,700 followers. Now, can I see everything everybody's putting out there? The ones that you find over time that you really like, you can put them in a list, and I have a list with about 12 people in it that I specifically follow to see what they're talking about at any given day. And, of course, I'll also scan through just the general tweets, but it goes pretty fast. The more people you're following, the more, you know, you got a lot. It just starts, you know, updating really fast. Here's one. Boy, if I could stop. I mean, mine goes so fast that I can hardly keep up. I just saw one by Alinsky Defeater. It said, Michelle Obama, Barack quoted Alinsky when we met. There you go. The kind of stuff you're not going to get in the mainstream media. So there she is telling us. Let me see if I can go to that, and I'll give you a good example of this. An article like that. But what you can do on Twitter is follow the American Hour, this show, and there's a reason for following us, because I take a lot of this stuff that I find, like this one that I just looked at. I generally look at all of the articles to ensure that there's some reasonableness there, and then I pass that information on. And when I do my own research for various articles, I Twitter those out to people to let them know things that I find that I'm not hearing on Fox and not seeing on certain websites. Some of these things are kind of buried. But this is the book. I guess somebody wrote a book, Barack Obama's Six-Part Plan to Destroy America. The name of the book is Be Hussein Obama, Goddamn America. Now, that's what his reverend said. Let's see what, you know, here's one of the problems. You find this stuff where somebody says that his wife said that she quoted Alinsky when they met. But then I don't see it on the website, but it may be here and somebody else. But that's the kind of thing you can find. The other thing is, when you see something like that, you're going to see stuff in emails floating around and maybe even the mainstream media that is false. And when you research it, because I clicked on this website, I could see getting emails about this occurring. But then when I go to, and you're not going to get the website or the link, you're just going to get an email telling you that this has happened, and a lot of people take that to be the truth. Then you actually can find something like this and find out that, no, that's not exactly what happened. But let's run through real quickly a couple of the things that I've put out recently, just to give you an idea. And, of course, it's slow. Twitter can be slow if it's getting overloaded, but here's what we said. I got an email today and spent about an hour talking with another former naval aviator out in San Diego running against Bill Bray, I believe is his Bill. He's in a district. He's the congressional representative of a district near where I used to live out there, pretty close to Miramar Naval Air Station, or former air station. Now it's Marine Corps Air Station. But I sent this out. I said, send a naval aviator to Congress, not another rhino. It's John Stahl for Congress in California's 50th District. And I put a link there to his website. Next one. Dummy in chief. Governor's state on fire denying climate change. And then I put, the president's brain is frozen and he's claiming climate change. So it's all over the news, but it's the most ridiculous thing. We've got raging wildfires in Texas, and that is directly linked to climate change. Yes, Barack Obama, the scientist and climatologist, knows. That is the absolute most unscientific, absolute lie when it comes to climate change, that somehow wildfires somewhere on the planet are caused by global warming. And in fact, we're in a cooling period right now. NASA tells us we're in a cooling period. So you're going to watch all the climate change people, because they're calling it climate change now. It's not global warming anymore, because global warming has stopped. So now it's got to be climate change. It doesn't matter which direction the climate goes. It's going to cause all of our problems, Paul, all of our problems. Now, I had this guy named Anti-Wacko. He doesn't have hardly anybody following him. If you want to go send him a nice little tweet, you can reply to him at Anti-Wacko. Here's what he had to say. He said, you're calling me a race baiter? I say it as it is. Ever since a black man became president, white men have become hysterical. Now, is that race baiting if you've ever heard it, Paula? There's the mind of a liberal.
I'm looking at it right now.
Well, what if I were to say, ever since a white president became president, black men have become hysterical? Oh, my gosh, I'd be called a racist left and right. These guys, this is the reality. These libtards are the most racist people we have in our country, the absolute most racist. And they're unapologetic about it, because they think they're so deluded, they think they're right. It's unbelievable. Okay. So let's see what else. Instead of replying to him, you can skip those. According to a bumbler, I have a green job when I fly passengers domestically, because it's mass transit, but a polluter when I fly international. We already talked about that. Let's find somewhere I put some links on here. Egypt activists vow to take over the U.S. Embassy in Cairo if we veto Palestinian statehood. Oh, wow, our friends in Egypt, you know, we supported them with their Arab Spring, and they're going to be our friends, and they're going to develop a democracy, except, oh, wait a minute, they're going to raid the U.S. Embassy if we veto the Palestinian statehood. Nice. Those are what you call friends, the kind of friends we really need. A Georgia middle school saying that Muslim polygamy is normal and burqas are good for women. Wow. Yeah. In this Christian, Judeo-Christian country, we're going to totally distort. Now, you know, we've said this before, Paula. The reason libtards embrace Islam, not because they like Islam and they're going to join it, because it's the one religion on the face of the earth that hates the West. That's why they're so accommodating to Islam. They love anything that hates our nation, our country, our way of life, because they themselves hate it. You never see true liberals embracing any religion and talking about religion, except occasionally when it suits them. But for the most part, they're so anti-religion, except when it comes to Islam, because Islam hates the West. Okay, Herman Cain. Here's an article. Herman Cain said, Morgan Freeman's sad ignorance doesn't offend me. But he at least can speak out and say, and it's true, Morgan Freeman. How about Moron Freeman? That's what I'm calling him from now on, Moron Freeman, because he thinks that, white people are racist, and that's why they don't like Obama. And he said it, you know, Obama's been bad for the liberal movement because he's black, and white people just hate black people. That's basically what he said. So, again, race baiters and the true racists show their colors. Gene McVeigh put this on here, the lowest ranking military E-1 who is married earns $38,580 a year. And then he talks about what the highest enlisted grade. So these people that are risking their lives day in and day out, deploying, lots of time away from their family, and we're now talking about we're going to make them pay more for their health care because, you know what, the Defense Department and our government didn't plan for escalating health care costs. Gee, Paula, escalating health care costs. We got two, three, four, who knows how many wars we got going on now with this president, but we didn't budget for it. My question is, what's next? Are we going to ask them to start paying for a portion of the bullets they use and the ammo and equipment that they wear? Because we didn't budget for that maybe in the future? This is the most ridiculous and despicable thing I've seen in a long time, and it's coming, quite honestly, from both parties. Let's see, chart of the week, and that's the one that I went over. U.S. rivals Japan for the world's highest corporate tax rate, and then I've got a link there. So a lot of the stuff I put out is less commentary. I throw a little comment in there, but I put articles that will take you or links to articles that will take you to stuff you're not going to see in the mainstream media, and I think it's a quick way for you to find stuff that I and others spend maybe a few hours a day or more looking for the truth out there. So in any case. Well, we didn't have our big guest today, Paula, but that's okay. We had fun talking about some other stuff. And you, I don't know if you've got it up or not, but you sent me from Newsmax some of the late-night jokes from, I guess, yesterday or last night. Was there anything in there you wanted to talk about?
Let me see. Well, Tonight's Show with Jay Letterman. It's the first day of fall, or as the Republicans call it, the end of global warming.
and as Democrats will call it, the beginning of climate change's freezing of the planet, or, you know, whatever. They'll have something to say.
Right.
About.
And he has another one here. Since the debate was in Florida, it was tough to get an audience because that's the time Wheel of Fortune is on.
Yeah, no, there was a big audience there, man. There were a lot of people there. I was impressed with
how many
people.
Imagine. It must have been a sight to see.
Yeah, it's not as big as going to D.C. when they do their annual one in D.C., but it was quite impressive for the first one ever in Florida. So I think there were over 4,000 people there for one day. It was just one day. It wasn't like CPAC D.C. is, I believe, 3 days. I've been there before. It's like 3 days over a weekend. So it was pretty good.
Nice.
No.
Oh. The last Republican debate was sponsored by Google. I think Google can really help. We should run a Google search for some better candidates.
Yeah, I saw the Google table there, and I thought, I'm not going to go over and talk to those guys. Why talk with them? They're clearly libtards.
Energy? And they're investing in green energy.
Yeah, they are. They are. And good. I want them. You know what? People like that, great. Kudos to you. Invest in that stuff and make it happen, because that's the capitalist way. Don't make the taxpayers pay for this stuff. If they're smart people, if they think they can make it work, then they probably can. They're not going to waste their money. They're going to run risk analysis, and they're going to pick things that they believe are winners. So good for them. I applaud them, and I hope they succeed. And that is the way we need to move forward in the future. Companies like Google investing in green technologies and green futures. And, I mean, look what they've done. Remember the first time you heard about Google, you're like, what the heck is Google? You know, and they just totally took the world by storm with their search engine. Of course, they created a model for searching that is different than anybody else was using. And that's why they're so successful, because they're better. And any case, yeah, no, I think that's great. And they were there, but I didn't want to go over and talk to them. They're a little too libtardish for me. But,
oh.
Well, here I see that David Letterman, the top 10 signs you're watching too much television, and I didn't really read through that, but here, I like this one. Your 52-inch high-definition butt. Sometimes I feel like I'm getting the 52-inch butt when I'm sitting on an airplane for 8 hours.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, the flight attendants keep shoving us, you know, airplane food. I try to avoid that stuff at all costs, you know, unless I'm really, really hungry. I try and bring stuff with me. But let's see. There was Craig Ferguson. I don't know if there was anything good there. And then Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon had a good one right up at the top.
Go ahead.
Someone's the windows in President Obama's L.A. campaign office, and today Joe Biden said it was likely the work of vandals and definitely not someone who forgot their key and had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, there you go. That is funny. And, of course, we know Joe Biden, according to Mark Levin, and I would absolutely agree with this, is the dumbest U.S. senator we've ever had in the history of our country and the dumbest vice president we've ever had. So he gets two awards, two ribbons, two statues for stupidity. He's hilarious to listen to because he just says stuff that is so stupid. I mean, he's really about as dumb as a doornail. But we love him because he is humor for us.
He keeps everything going. Mitt Romney says he wants Sarah Palin to run for president to make the race more exciting. Although with Mitt Romney running, even Al Gore on Ambien would make the race more exciting.
Oh, boy. Well, that's yeah, I like Mitt, and talk about it. We're not going to endorse anybody yet, and, of course, we'll all have our individual endorsements. But the time will come, and we're not going to wait till it's, like, so obvious. We're going to pick who we think is the real winner. And we already know who we like. We've talked about it before, but we'll watch a few more debates. And before it really gets down to the wire, we'll pick our favorites, who we like, number one, and who we think really can win and beat Obama. And quite honestly, I think any one of them can beat Obama. He has no record. The key is whoever runs against him, no matter who they are, has got to key on his record and then say why they won't have such an abysmal record, what they're going to do that will be different from what he's done. And it will be very obvious to even the most casual of observers that this guy's incompetent, in over his head, and there are better ways to run our country. So, Paula, it's been fun. Thanks for joining us. And live from Boston, I didn't say that earlier, but that's where you are. Everybody knows that. I'll give you the last word as we close out the show.
A shout out to our troops serving overseas. Lord, hold our troops in your loving hands. Protect them as they protect us, and bless them and their families for their selfless acts they perform for us in our time of need. Your families love you and miss you and want you home real soon.
Awesome. Wow. I don't think anybody could have said that any better. Thank Paula. We'll see you again Wednesday night, and we'll see if we can get our guest up for that. I don't know if we have any other guests planned. Otherwise, we'll do another show like this. Maybe we'll do an abbreviated show, and we'll have fun. All right, Paula, have a good next couple days. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Bye.
Okay, bye now.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.